Tu aimes ça?
Oui, non.
Un petit peu, mais pas beaucoup, hein? Elliot, something I always chuckle at when I hear a goalie coach speak. When his goaltender is on a roll and really doing well, whenever I hear the goalie coach say something along the lines of, well, you know what about this goaltender? He really listens to his goalie coach. I always sort of snicker to myself, and I can never see Sudarshan Maharaj ever saying that.
First of all, he wouldn't because he doesn't like the attention.
Correct.
That's number one. Number two, you just said his full name. I remember the first time I did it, he looked at me and goes, call me Sudsy.
And that's the name that he goes by.
I remember, actually, he knows Kevin Weeks really well. And when Kevin was, when we worked together, I would just say, I said his name once, and Kevin looked at me and goes, call him Sudsy. So it's not only him telling me that, it was his friends, like Kevin Weeks, telling me that. No, he's not a guy who likes a lot of attention. I think his whole job description is interesting. Like, he doesn't want, and you'll hear it in the interview about why he's not around John Gibson and Ryan Miller and the Ducks goalies all the time. I thought that was pretty fascinating. And I just think he's a really interesting guy. And I hope you'll find it too when you listen to this.
Really enjoyed this interview. This is Sudsy on 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks. Sudarshan Maharaj is our guest today on 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks. And I know inside your head, as soon as I say that, you're saying to yourself, just call me Sudsy. Who gave you that nickname? Where did that nickname come from? Because it is legendary. I remember once when I worked at Hockey Night in Canada with Kevin Weeks, he kept going on about Sudsy this, Sudsy that, Sudsy this. Who gave you that nickname?
It started being Trinidadian and moving to Canada when I was six. It was Sudarshan. And no one could say Sudarshan, certainly not the neighborhood kids. And so, well, of course, you have to shorten it. So Sudarshan became Suds. And then the mandatory IE got tacked on there.
Hockey.
So you got Sudsy. And so it stuck all the way through. And I understand there was a legendary trainer in Dallas who was an equipment manager that was also a Sudsy as well. So I wasn't the first, but one of the few anyway.
So give us the nickel and dime tour then. So you come from Trinidad to Toronto?
Yes.
And then how do you get from there to here talking to Elliot and myself right now?
It was a long and winding road. Growing up in Etobicoke, all the kids, neighborhood kids played hockey, joined the local house league and progressed from there. Ended up going to Sweden for 6 years, played in Sweden for 6 years, came back, finished my degree, was a school teacher for 12. But it was coaching goalies on the side. I worked with kids with behavioral issues. So I always said I worked with behavioral issues, kids with behavioral issues and goalies. So they meshed perfectly. And from there, was coaching goalies on the side all those years. I was goal coach at York University through various junior teams. And then a tall, lanky kid from Bolton, my name is Stephen Valiquette, ended up working with Steve for a while. Through Steve, ended up working with Kevin Weeks, and then ended up getting the Islander job. And was with the Islanders for 8 years, and then now in year 7 with the Ducks.
Okay, there's a couple of things I want to go with from there. Number one, I remember as a kid reading the story of how Stan Mikita, who came to Canada, didn't know anything about hockey. The first time he picked up a hockey stick, he whacked somebody with it. Just didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And they said to him, no, this is, I mean, you can use it for that sometimes, but generally you're supposed to use it for this. You said all the kids in your neighborhood played hockey. Do you remember the first time you played road hockey?
Yes. We just moved into a new neighborhood in Etobicoke, and we were all sitting, my two brothers and I were sitting at the window watching the neighborhood kids play ball hockey outside, too shy and timid to go out and ask to join, till finally one of the kids came and knocked on the door and said, hey, you guys want to come out and play? And grabbed some sticks, started playing. Next thing I know, my oldest brother, Dean, was a huge Bernie Perrant fan. Huge Bernie Perrant fan. And so he said, you're going to be a goalie and you're going to play just like this. And so I bought the Jacques Plante book, which was the only book on the market at that time for goalies, and dog-eared it, and ended up joining the local house league as a goalie and progressed from there.
Do you still have that book?
You know what? Unfortunately, my mom tossed it out a few years ago when they moved prior to her passing. And so I lost that book, which was unfortunate.
Do you recall anything from it?
Oh, I remember the angles. I remember standing up and learning how to do skate saves because of that book. I learned his description of puck handling behind the net from that book. Oh, yeah, it was all-inclusive, all-encompassing. And there were two sort of pivotal moments that I remember as a kid. The other was my dad, you know, new families to Canada. My dad got a job working at a car dealership, cleaning cars, and eventually ended up progressing to selling them. That's what he did for the rest of his life. And my mom worked at a factory. And my dad was given two tickets to a Leaf game, Maple Leaf Gardens. Never been to a Leaf game. I had grown up watching the Big Bad Bruins, you know, win the Stanley Cup. I was lying on my mom's knee watching that game when Bobby Orr scored that goal. I remember that. So we go down, we take the subway down to Maple Leaf Gardens. And back in those days, they had the low glass along the side. As luck would have it, the tickets were right on the blue line at home end at Maple Leaf Gardens. Mm-hmm. So there it was, Wayne Thomas in net.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Daryl Sittler and Boris Salming and Ian Turnbull and the whole crew. And a young player for the Leafs saw me sitting there against the glass during warm-up, and he picked up a puck and he reached over and he dropped it over the glass for me. My very first NHL game, a player gave me the puck. That player was Bruce Boudreaux, and I ended up working with him in Anaheim.
And he obviously didn't remember that story,
right?
Oh, no,
I had no clue about that story, but it made a huge impact on me. I still remember that moment when he dropped that puck for me. To this day, if I see a kid in the stands during morning skate, I will always throw one puck, at least.
So when you told Bruce that story, what did he say?
He couldn't believe I remembered that.
Yeah.
And I said, are you kidding me? That was a huge moment in my life, that to get a puck in my very first Leaf game from a Leaf player was a huge moment. And it turned out to be Bruce.
See, you're in a wonderful spot, and Elliot and I are in similar as well. And I don't take any of it for granted ever, because we all grew up watching those same players. And now we have the opportunity to meet them, talk to them, have, you know, personal relationships with them, go out socially and meet them. You mentioned watching Bobby Orr score on Glenn Hall.
Yes.
Did you ever meet either one of them?
Well, it's funny. There's a couple of those stories there. Rich Preston, former player for the Blackhawks and WHL, played with Gordie Howe and Lannis. Rich would tell you he played with both Howes, and the name of the line was How, and Who. and he'll tell you that story. And so Rich said one day, as we're about to play the Oilers, hey, do you ever want to meet Glenn Hall? At which point I stopped hyperventilating enough to say, yeah. And we drove out to his place. Glenn doesn't get out very much anymore, but we drove out to his place and sat and had dinner with Glenn and had a hoot. And we laughed for about 2 hours. He's as sharp as a tack still. It's so much fun. And then next time we went over, we went back again, had dinner at his granddaughter's place, and Glenn came out with us. And I said, Glenn, you have to come out to meet our goalies in Anaheim. I need them to meet you. He refused to do it at first. He didn't believe that the tax money should be used to pay for a rink. But eventually relented and came out and met with, at the time, Jonathan Bernier and John Gibson. And Gibson, who is not a guy that spends a lot of time, you know, watching hockey, studying hockey and all that, elbowed me and said, God, the old guy's funny. and had a great, like, he is as, Glenn is as sharp as a tack still, hilarious. And so we, have I met him? Yes, we've become friends. And so every time I go to Alberta, Glenn will come out and visit, and or I will go out and see him. And the only other goalie I have just was dying to meet when I first broke into the league, first year with the Islanders, we were playing in Philadelphia, and the Spectrum was still around. And so the basketball floor was down, and so we were going to practice at the Spectrum, which was a huge thing. So as I skate across the ice, we get dressed in the one rink, and we go across on the bus and throw my skates on. I don't even have my laces tied up, and I glide across, and I sit down in the penalty box, and I say to one of the security guys, hey, does Brittany Perron ever come around anymore? He goes, oh, Bernie. Bernie's in that room over there signing some things for the season ticket holders. Well, that was it. So off the skates come, and I jump the glass. And so Kurt Fraser says to me, one of our assistant coaches then, where are you going? Practice about to start. No, Bernie Perron's in that room. I'm going in that room. And so I run across the thing in my socks, and I walk into the room. There's Bernie Perron signing 8,500 of these porcelain figurines of himself. And I introduced myself to Goalie Coach of the Islanders. I was your ultimate fan growing up. And such a wonderful man. Great sense of humor. Just a wonderful man to meet.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah, and ended up coercing somebody to get us a few of those figurines.
I was going
to
say, did you reach and grab one as you walked out of the room?
Ended up getting one and hiding it in my bag under the bus before Steve Sterling could bust me.
true or false about Bernie Parent, the best angle goalie of all time?
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Glenn was pretty good in his day too. Yep. But Bernie was incredible. You know, the thing about Glenn that amazed me, I asked the question, so Glenn, what made you sort of come to the butterfly? What made you do that? And he went on a dissertation for about 10 minutes about angles and release points and all of that, that was so far ahead of the curve. Mm. I was stunned sitting there. My jaw dangled. He's clearly a brilliant man. So listening to Glenn Hall describe why he took to the butterfly and created the butterfly in its modern, you know, incarnation was incredible. Hmm. And so, yes, with Bernie Parent, absolutely one of the great angle goalies of all time.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned you go end up with the Islanders. Like, who is your champion? Who is the guy who said, okay, Sudsy, maybe you're not part of the general hockey world that people know of, but I'm taking the chance on you. How did that happen?
It came out. Steve Valiquette called me and he said, listen, we got a young goalie here that's in the minors, Rick DiPietro.
Yeah.
And he's struggling. You know, would you spend a little bit of time with him? And so as luck would have it, the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, where Rick was playing the Hamilton Bulldogs in the Calder Cup playoffs. So I drove to Hamilton and I did a complete breakdown of what I saw Rick's game was. And it mortified him because I gave him the whole nine yards. So Valley called me the next night. He said, Sudsy, you got to take it easy on him. I don't know if he wants to see you anymore.
He's a confident guy too. You must have really crushed him.
And so the next night, he kind of reluctantly came out to see me after the game. And I looked at him and I said, Rick, you got to understand where I'm coming from with this. There's a native saying that the longest journey that we take in life is from our head to our heart and our heart to our head. That's the longest journey we take in life. And I said, you need to understand, you haven't begun that journey yet. And this is how I see that journey progressing. And the shoulders slumped and the head went down. And he said, you know what? You're the first person that's ever told me that. And he got on the bus and he said, you know, I'm going to work with that guy one day. Well, as luck would have it, 2 years went by. Never heard from him, never saw him, never talked to him. And the Islanders were going through coaches, you know. And they said to him, he was in the minors, and they said, you know, what can we do to make you the goalie that we think you should be? And he said, there's this guy in Toronto. Huh. That's the guy I want to work with.
I wondered about that. Like, who was your champion?
And it was Rick DiPietro and Steven Valiquette and Kevin Weeks. Those were the guys.
Do you recall the issues that you had with DiPietro's game? Because I can remember early seeing him, you know, without his equipment, and I thought I was looking at a bodybuilder. Well, and I said to myself, is this guy too big to be too muscular to be a goalie?
The 0-4 lockout, he came back with these 15-inch pipes and just built like a power lifter. And there was no question it had an impact. You know, one of the things that, and I hear this, all people say this all the time, oh, he was a bomb, he was a flop, you know, all this. The injury that was the final blow to Rick was the injury sustained at the All-Star game.
Look at how much room. He's probably got a foot there to slide it in. Or again, elevate the puck. Over DiPietro.
Oh, no, he's got some speed. I might have to go take his legs out.
Go ahead. Oh! That was a rebound. It doesn't count. The scissor move worked. Just like youth hockey school, eh, Rick?
Yeah, just like you. Timmy, you go in there. I'm done. Oh, my God. I just blew my whole leg off.
And I remind people that he was good enough to be in the All-Star game. It was the injury he sustained in the All-Star game is what set off the spiral.
Yeah.
And so here's a goal that played for the U.S. Olympic team at the Olympics, played in the All-Star game. It wasn't that bad. It's just the contract gets thrown in there and all those things. Mm-hmm. But that injury that he sustained in the All-Star game had lasting impact and the surgeries that resulted in that.
So, you know, I want to talk to you a little bit about your current job. Jeff, before you came in, Sudsy was saying that we think he's the only goaltending coach in the NHL right now who doesn't spend every day with the goalies. You take 10 days, about a month, where you're not with John Gibson and Ryan Miller, the current Ducks tandem. Why do you think that's important?
Goaltending is such an intensely cerebral position, and there's so many personality traits that go into that. I've always been a firm believer that the goalies need some time on their own. They also need to figure some things out on their own too. So just being there as somebody that supports them and works with them and can, you know, go in there, get them going to where I believe they should be, where they should be at, letting them cruise for a little while. Once the ship starts to veer a little bit, you come in, you straighten it a little bit, and you work on, you spend some time with them, you get in their head, see where they're at. I'm a firm believer that they need a little bit of time on their own as well, and they don't need somebody in their ear all the time. I'm a firm believer in that. I am definitely in the minority in that way, mm-hmm. because it has gone to the guy that's there every day, every day, every day. I don't believe in that. I believe that the guys should have a little bit of time on their own.
I want to ask you.
Sorry, you said Bob Murray agrees with you on
Bob
that, too.
Bob agrees with that,
I mean, ultimately, the most important thing is your boss sees it the same way.
If he's going to buy into that philosophy. And Bob, having had Francois Lair, having had Pete Peters, who also did the same thing, has kept to that model.
I want to ask you about different goals that goalies surrender. Mike Bossy would talk about scoring goals five hole. Mm. Psychologically, he would say, if I pick a corner, a goalie can say, that's just a great shot.
Yeah.
No one's stopping that shot. If it goes five hole, psychologically, I've put the puck through the goaltender and it gets him up here.
Sure.
True or false?
True. True. I think that is true. You know, when you look at it, and goals are all viewed... There's this belief that you know, all goals are bad. You know, sometimes you just got to tip your hat. Now, as far as a five-hole goal, if you watch in slow motion when a goalie drops, you will see that little triangle form above the top of their blade as the goalie's going down. And that little triangle is the last little piece left until the knees come down and fully collapse. There are times when a guy rips one, and even though you're trying to hit the deck as fast as you can, physiologically, you can only go a certain speed. And there are certain times where even a five-hole goal is a darn good shot, you know? And so, yeah, every goalie says, he caught me five-hole. I should have had that. But if you actually slow it down and you look at it in slow motion, occasionally, it's just a good shot.
Braden Holtby says he has three rankings of goals. Could have had, should have had, no freaking chance.
Yeah.
What's your ranking system?
I would say that's a pretty spot on one. That's a pretty good spot on way of saying that. There are times when no matter what you do and what you say, you know, everybody in the world knows where Alex Ovechkin's standing. Everybody in the world knows that he's one time in that puck. Sometimes it's just a good shot. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. But as a goalie, as goalie coaches, we set the mark. You have to set the bar somewhere. And as you know what that old saying is, better to aim for the stars and miss than to aim for that pile of dung and hit it. You have to set the bar high and aim for making every save.
All right, take a couple seconds apiece and tell us about three of your guys. John Gibson, who probably, because the Ducks' results haven't been there the last couple of years, doesn't get enough credit for how good he is. Mm-hmm. Ryan Miller, who's seen everything. And because we're in Toronto, the center of the hockey universe, you got to tell us about Frederik Andersen. Let's go with these three guys.
You know what? Team policy, I'm not allowed to speak about opposition players. However, I can speak about Freddie Andersen when I had him.
Okay. First of all, Bob doesn't listen to podcasts. So I think you're okay.
Yeah. I'll start with Gibson. There's a guy who is, there's no question he was underappreciated for an awfully long time. I go back to Christmas two seasons ago where he hit this switch and he had about a 957 save percentage for the last half of the year. And I'd watch, and Elliot, you know this story. I'd be watching different telecasts. You can't miss it. You're back and forth to Toronto. You see little things about lists of goalies and things like that. I would shake my head because every once in a while, somebody would say, I hope we get Anaheim. Their goaltending's there is an issue. And we've got a goalie with a 957 and another goalie with a 932. And I'm going, clearly somebody hasn't been watching. And so Gibson has really come into his own And it's been about 3 years now, if you get into half of this season. He's one of the most quiet competitors you've ever met. He's extremely competitive, yet you would never know when you speak to him, when you see him, when you see him on a surface level. Gibby and I rode the buses together in the minors. We have been together going on 7 years now at the end of the season. We've had our moments, let me tell you. There have been times where I've wanted to beat him with a coho. But there are other times where he has been incredible to deal with. And his reads are beyond none. His ability to see the play. We'll sit through penalty killing meetings and he'll watch the video and he has every pattern that they use on their power play memorized, where he'll ask me these questions where I have to go back and look at the video again. Like it's unbelievable. His ability to process the play is incredible and has really matured as a human being, as a person. I can't speak highly enough about John Gibson as a person. Ryan Miller has been a treat to work with. Ryan is as professional can be. When I first got him, I didn't know what to get. I'd seen the videos, I'd seen the interviews, I'd seen all those things. I didn't know what I was getting. And with the exception of one time where I had to snap the whip a little bit.
Tell us what it was.
Ryan can get in his head at times and was processing some stuff and wasn't listening. And I simply reminded him that if we were going to work together, that there would be some listening going on too. and from that point on, it was vastly different in the relationship. And like I said, Gibby is the same. Every once in a while, you have to remind him that he has to listen. So Ryan is, I can't describe what a consummate professional Ryan Miller is. He is a lot of fun to work with. I refer to every once in a while, I have to jingle the keys and distract him a little bit so that I can get what I want to get done. But he is a lot of fun. Freddie, I cannot describe a player that has spent more time on working on himself as much as Frederik Andersen. He was certainly not in great shape when we drafted him. I'll tell this story. Freddie will kill me for telling this story, but I'll tell the story.
I like this.
Yeah. Freddie had gotten sent back down from Anaheim. And he came down to the minors and didn't really want to be there and wasn't working very hard and left the ice early after practice and all those things. And I called him out. It takes, as you can tell, I'm a pretty laid back guy. The Caribbean in me comes out pretty good. And I called him out into the hallway and I used a few words that I won't use now and described where I thought he was at that moment and really laid into him. And out we marched back onto the ice and away we went. That night, we were having a meeting. Freddie came and he stood beside me. And at the end of the meeting, he said to me, "I got a haircut." I thought, "Okay. Yeah." And he said, "I thought I'd change my look to go with my attitude."
Mm.
And he walked away. And it was a complete 180. Never had to address that point ever again with Freddie Andersen. And it was one of those aha moments with me, with he and I. And to the point where a couple summers ago, I got a text. "Hey, Sudsy, what are you doing?" Because I'm in Oakville. "Oh, nothing. Can I come to your house for lunch?" And out he marches over, drives over, has lunch with my daughters and drives away. My daughters are like, "You mean the goalie for the Leafs just came over to have lunch with us?" "Yeah." Yeah, and away he went. And Freddie has done some wonderful things, and I give full credit to Freddie Andersen. One of the things that drives me absolutely crazy are goalie coaches that beat their chest and stand out there talking about how they've created these guys. I hate those guys because we are not squeezing blood from any stones. We are getting some pretty high-end athletes, and Freddie Andersen to me gets a lot of credit for what he's done. He spent a lot of time working on himself and on his game.
How did you feel about him handling the puck when he was with Anaheim? Because I can remember having a conversation with someone in the goaltending community about Freddie Andersen when he came to Toronto, mm-hmm. and he was handling the puck a lot more than ever. Yes. So I'm like, well, you know, he's pretty good. This seems new. And this person said to me, yeah, in Anaheim, they didn't like him touching the puck.
That's not true. We liked it simple. We like to simplify the game. We weren't going for long bomb stretch passes and all mm-hmm. of that. But his exchanges, and when he did have to make an outlet, he had the skill to make an outlet. But that's not true. We didn't encourage the big long bombs, that right. I can say, because we did play a fairly defensive system. But I thought it was one of the areas of the game that really improved that time was how well he handled the puck.
Are you able to tell, because you're right in the middle of it as far as like coaching goaltenders, are you able to look at a goaltender in the league and say, yeah, that's from Mike Bales. Yeah, that's from whomever. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, you definitely see elements of guys. Now, that is changing. The position has become more and more uniform. There was a time when there was a variance. You could see the French goalies, you could see the American goalies, you could see the Western Canadian goalies, you know, you could definitely see some variance in their game. It has become much more uniform, so you see less of that, but there's no question you see some tendencies, you know, how guys handle certain situations around the goalposts, how guys handle certain situations on lateral plays, things like that. Yeah, you can definitely see some variance.
I'm so actually a little bit surprised to hear that, because I think this year, and maybe it's just me, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because you would know this more than I would, but I see like Price had a two-pad stack a couple weeks ago. Like I watched those guys in Columbus, like they're all over the ice. I see more guys now, it's almost like they're making up stuff yeah. to make saves. I think it's fantastic.
I think it's great too. I swear to God, when Gibson pulls out a poke check on shootouts, I don't know if you've seen it, mm-hmm. but he will pull out a poke check on shootouts. I swear there's going to be a time where he's going to stand up and give me the point, because he knows it drives me absolutely around the bend. But he, with the changes to the equipment, with the changes to the game, and the fact that the game has become so lateral, there is more room for some structural changes to the structural integrity. And so, yes, you will see some of those things, I think, more often. You will see a few more guys, ad-libbing a little more, because the game has become a little more open.
Do you find that goaltenders, after allowing, and I'm going to go Ryan Miller with this on you, it's going to become obvious where I'm going here in a second. Do you find that goaltenders are shy do a move after it's burned them? And specifically with Ryan Miller on the Sidney Crosby golden goal, the minute that Crosby sees Miller's hand coming up the shaft, he fires it.
Yes.
Crosby reads that so wonderfully. It's like, that's part of the brilliance of Crosby. He sees, okay, Miller's going poke check on that. I'm going to fire and it's going in. And sure enough, it does. Has Ryan Miller ever discussed that particular goal with you? And do you find that after a situation like that, that a goaltender, this is a wide brush I'm painting with here, they become gun shy to pull that out again?
Have we ever discussed that specific goal? No. But if you watch the John Tavares goal he got on overtime the other night, Ryan tried to poke it on the pass. And so has he become gun shy on it? No, he hasn't become gun shy on it. NHL goalies spend their entire careers under siege, you know, as they're coming up through the ranks. I say to the guys all the time, goalies, regardless of their level, have to have an inner core belief. And at no point can that core belief be eroded, because that core belief is what's going to be the thing that's going to make them withstand anything. And that is constantly being chiseled at. All the time. It's being chiseled at by coaches, by fans, by media, by everyone, teammates, you know? And so it has to be fortified, not eroded. And so one circumstance can't erode that, because that thing, as I say, being a big fan of music, that's their mojo. Mm. That's their thing. And the minute you strip, as a coach, you strip their mojo, or they themselves diminish their mojo, then you're in trouble. And so I'm a big believer in my goalies in particular having a little bit of freedom to be aggressive. And if they make a mistake on it, let's look at the circumstance. We were playing New York, the Islanders a while back. Barzal came down a breakaway. Gibson went for the poke check. Just missed.
Lee to Barzal, back to Lee. Barzal breaking, uses the glove. Matt Barzal cutting in, and he scores! Oh, what a goal for Matt Barzal! The speed and the backhand finish into the roof of the net.
And puck's just shot in front, and Jordan Eberle, Andrews Lee, they get it up in a hurry, and Lee says, I know who to give this puck to. They make quick give and go, and then he takes that one up in the toy department, Brendan. And then look at Barzal. He knows right away, catches it, backhand, and up in the toy department. What a goal by Matt Barzal. But what a great play, too, by Anders Lee. Real heady play to make the pass.
Just missed, but Barzal ripped it on him, and it looked bad. But it wasn't a bad move because he went for it, and I don't have an issue with that. If we're going to go, let's go. Conservative goaltending, yeah, there are times when you have to be, but there's times when you got to go too. Mm-hmm. And that's the excitement of the position. And that to me, as a coach, giving them the freedom to express themselves that way is a part of their DNA. It's part of their fingerprint. And if I take that fingerprint away from them, then I'm not helping them. I'm hindering them.
Sudsy, the last one for me, Jeff. You know, there's one story in your history that is, I'm sure, tough for you to talk about, and that was what happened in Sweden. Mm-hmm. You had a Molotov cocktail thrown in your car once. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about the future of hockey and whether it's inclusionary enough. You would be more qualified to speak on this topic than just about anyone. Do you feel accepted in hockey?
I think acceptance is what you make it. And what I mean by that is that's kind of a vague answer, but do I feel accepted in hockey? I think you can make yourself accepted by doing your job and doing it well enough that there's no opportunity for you to not be accepted. And so when I was growing up, my parents said to me, here's reality, son. you're going to have to be twice as good as the other guy.
That's what Anthony Stewart says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to be twice as good as the other guy because you're not going to get anything handed to you. So accept that and you'll be fine.
How did you receive that?
At the time, it's your parents and you're a teenager and you're going, yeah, whatever, mom. Yeah. Yeah. But it did resonate because when I was coaching junior hockey, this is a true story. I thought I'd been coaching junior hockey, produced some pretty good goalies, coaching tier two. Thought, okay, well, the next step's the OHL. I'll try to get a job with the OHL. And I couldn't even get an interview. And I got to the point where I got this rejection letter, which I still had for a number of years, from a very famous OHL coach. And basically the letter was, A, you're a teacher, you don't have the time. B, I don't think you're qualified. And C, I don't think you'll ever be qualified. And I remember reading that letter thinking, all right, there's two things I can do here. I can take this for what it is and stay where I am, or I can jump the OHL. That's my other choice. I'll jump the OHL. I was naive enough to think I had to do that. And as luck would have it, it ended up happening. To this day, I've never been able to get an interview in the Ontario Hockey League. So that's just reality. And so to go back to your question, am I accepted? I think after 15 years, I have to say, yeah, I'm accepted because of people like Bob Murray, because of people like Mike Milbury, who didn't view any other, you know, any of that as a circumstance. It's never been an occurrence, I think, to Bob Murray ever that I'm different than the other coaches on his staff. And to the Mr. and Mrs. Samueli. If we ever met the Samuelis, but they're incredible people. I'm not just saying that because they're the owners, but Mr. Samueli, like myself, is a huge music guy. Mm-hmm. And if you ever get a chance to interview him, you have to ask him about his jamming with Metallica. It's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so acceptance, I think, is what you make it. You go and you do a good enough job. There are good people out there that will give you the opportunity. I choose to look at it that way and not look at the ones that won't. Have I not had an opportunity? Because of it? Oh, yeah. But I also have had an opportunity, and it's been 15 years. So
I have two more, Sudsy, and one of them is along that vein as well. What can, and I don't just want to make this exclusive to the NHL, but what more can hockey do to make its sport more inclusive?
You know what? It comes down to, I think it's the grassroots. When you look at the cost of hockey right now, I think that is the single biggest issue, I think, that's going to determine the makeup of hockey in the future in Canada. When you're looking at the cost of enrollment, the cost of private instruction, the cost of equipment, all of that. You know, then will the next Kevin Weeks be able to come out of hockey from a family in Scarborough when the cost of goal equipment is what it is and the cost of enrollment is what it is? And I think that is the biggest issue that's going to determine the makeup of hockey in the future, not attitudes necessarily. Of course, that's going to have an impact on it. But until the cost of hockey becomes a little more reasonable, I think then that's the way you're going to get new Canadians and new immigrants in Canada to take part.
I want to end on this one. You're obviously a student of your craft, the goaltending craft. You referenced the Jacques Plante book. Mm. You referenced wanting to be Bernie Parent growing up, and that's because of your older brother. What do you think when you go back and look at goaltenders from the 70s? I've maintained that in the entire
sports... How many goals would Alexander Ovechkin score against those goalies?
In the entire sports landscape, all right, not just hockey, the position of hockey goaltender is more improved than any other position in any sport. When you look at goaltending in the 70s or even into the 80s, what goes through your mind?
You know, it's funny, having played in that generation, I have a difficult time comparing between generations because of that generation, they were the best. And so there's no, you know, criticizing that. However, when I watched that, when I watched the Bobby Orr tape of 49 wrist shots from the blue line that went in, you do have to chuckle a little bit, you know, and watching Roger Crozier catch himself on the crossbar as he falls backwards, as the puck gets blown 5-hole through him, through the skate save. There's no question these goaltenders are incredible, and they really are. Like any sport, like any thing where biomechanics have been applied, where training principles have been applied, there's been so much minutia around the goaltending position, which I have to tell you is one of my biggest criticisms of how of goalie coaches now too, because there are times where I think as goalie coaches we've overcomplicated the position. And you know, Jason LaBarbera, who had had 14 goalie coaches in 15 years when I got him in Anaheim. We were practicing one day and he turned to me and he said, "Saz, I got to tell you, man, you coached the simplest goal of any goalie coach I've ever had. And that was the greatest compliment a goalie has ever given me." He said, "You know what? You make it so easy to not overthink it." And that to me was, I thought, ah, thank you. I finally, somebody's listening. tell that to Gibson at the other end. But it was the nicest thing any goalie had ever said to me at that point.
You know, once upon a time, so I lied, so it's actually three last questions, Sudsy. Once upon a time, if you took a hockey team out of their hockey equipment and just lined them up against the wall, you could pick out who the goaltender was.
Oh, yeah, no question.
Now you can't.
No.
Are goalies normal now? Once upon a time, it was, oh, crazy goalies. Yeah. Oh, they're different than everybody else. Are they just like everybody else then?
Oh, no, they're still bad. No. no, they're, you know what? There's definitely some differences in how they approach life and how they approach the game. But there is a little more of normality has creeped in to their everyday. Physiologically, physically, there's no good. Training methods have changed so much for them as well. You know, this is a funny story. A few summers way, way back, I had Ray Emery and Rick DiPietro come up to skate in the summertime. And in they come in their training garb and, you know, and they start getting ready. And it was like watching two linebackers. I mean, it was unbelievable. Kevin Weeks was a part of that group too. I mean, these guys were stunning athletes. I mean, they were jacked. That build is gone too, you know. And now we have the much more lean, lanky, you know. I used to say one of the things I love about Marc-Andre Fleury is that he could tie shoelaces without bending over. Those long arms, you know, that he could just... It's incredible. Gibson has
Did you ever say that to Fleury's face?
No. But Flower, I ended up spending a little bit of time with him a couple of summers ago on the ice with his goalie guy in Montreal. And we had a good laugh. And Flower, I have to tell you, one of the nicest human beings you can ever meet. I truly have a lot of respect for Marc-Andre Fleury. To this day, during the warm-ups, I always sit on the bench in warm-ups watching our goalie and their goalie. And Flower will always throw by and squirt the water bottle a little as he goes by. But yes, physiologically, there's no question there's a change. But they have become much more uniform like the players. You have that lanky, lean lean build now.
Okay, indulge me. One more and then I'm done, I swear.
Oh, my
one
God.
One more and then I'm done. Just thought of this now as we're talking about different goaltenders specifically. Is there a way you want goaltenders to practice? There are some goaltenders we know. Dominic Hasek hated being scored on, whether it was a game or practice, and he would internalize it, and he battled every puck. Is that sane?
You know what? It comes down to personality types. I remember hearing stories about Ed Belfour leaving the pucks in the net so he'd count them at the end of practice, how many goals went in. And if you dared take one out from behind his back, you got a stick thrown at you. I'd heard that story where Miller is one of those guys that, and again, playing to his personality, he's one of those guys, gets very fired up when one creeps through him in practice. Gibson will give me will look over his shoulder and give me the shoulder shrug. That one got by. But that's his personality type. So is there a one, just like how I don't believe that there should be a one-size-fits-all training method for the goalies, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all attitude for practice either. As long as, for me, as long as they're working on their skills and keeping them as polished and as refined as possible, then I think that's the key. As for how they go about doing that, I think there's room for some maneuvering too, again, playing on their personalities.
I still have a million more, but we'll cut it off. Sudsy, thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.